the odds weren't very good to start with, and when they got, and then they got worse. Or better, it just depends on whose side you're on. You know, he was just a farmer, unlike some farmers. He had no desire to be anything but a farmer. He never had political ambitions. He never dreamt of being a military leader. And yet God had a different plan for his life. The Israelites had been delivered from Egypt. They'd settled in the Promised Land. And during that time, they were ruled by men and women that were called judges. And if you read through the book of Judges in the Old Testament, you discover that the people of Israel kind of bounced back and forth from being faithful and obedient to God to being disobedient. And it was during this time of obedience that God showed Israel his favor, and it was during this time of disobedience that God removed his blessing from Israel. And so if you look here on the chart we put up here, so historically, to put things kind of in perspective, there's Joseph, who has been sold into slavery in the Exodus, which happened about 400 years later. Then there is David, later on we see David down the line, who establishes the kingdom, the important kingdom that we mentioned. And so here's the time of the judges in between that. And, you know, the time of David is David and Goliath. But before that is this time of judges, and they rule over Israel during this transition period from the time that they come into the land to the time that they actually have a king. After 40 years of peace and prosperity, the people here began to wander away from God again. They went in this moral decline. And of course, when they went in this moral decline, they found themselves under military oppression again. And this time it was the Midianites who were putting the whooping on Israel. Now, the Midianites were a nomadic tribe. And if we look at the map, we see that they live pretty much where the country of Syria is today. The Midianites will wait until the people of Israel had finished planting their crops, and then they'd sweep down on them, and they would steal their crops from the field and their herds, and take their herds, and they would destroy what they could, and then they would go back. And this was the way, you know, they didn't have to go through all that toil of plowing a field and planting the seed, irrigating the field, or being worried about that. All they had to do was wait till it was about time to harvest the crop, and they would come down and they would steal the crop, they would steal the herds, and then they would go back. Well, this went on for 7 years, and it was getting a little old. And so the people cried out to God to deliver them, and he called someone to lead his people. Firstly, out of military oppression, and secondly, out of their moral oppression. And that person was the man named Gideon. And if we know anything about Gideon, is that he went around motels and to put Bibles in the rooms, didn't he? Gajah Gabor, who was married to Conrad Helton, who had a few Bibles in his facilities, said, "Conrad Hilton was very generous to me in the divorce settlement. He gave me 5,000 Gideon Bibles." To some extent, now the name Gideon is familiar to us simply because of the Gideons and the Gideon Bibles. But we'll look at the story a little more detailed. Actually, as we alluded to before, Gideon was a farmer. The angel of the Lord appeared to him. Gideon informed him that he was to deliver the children of Israel from the Midianites. Well, after a little convincing, Gideon issued a call across Israel to arms, and they responded. And as they came, Gideon became a little nervous. And it was one thing for a farmer to say that he was going to lead an army in a battle, and it was another thing for a farmer to actually take that army into battle, especially when you only have 32,000 men and the other guy has 135,000 men. And so our hero got into a little discussion with God, and he said, "Tell you what, God, if this is what you really want me to do, you're going to have to give me a sign, and here's what we're going to do. I will put out a sheep's fleece on the ground tonight, and if in the morning the ground is dry and the fleece is wet, then I'm your guy. I mean, yeah, that's pretty good. You can do that. Well, next morning Gideon gets up, the ground's dry as a bone, but the fleece is sopping wet. Well, still not wanting to, you know, to rush into this thing. And, you know, his mother may have raised him a coward, but she didn't raise him a fool. And Gideon again prays. He says, I don't want to get annoying, but let's try it the other way. I'll leave the fleece out again tonight, and in the morning, if the ground is wet and the fleece is dry, then I know that at least you're listening to me. So he gets up the next morning, and sure enough, the ground is covered in dew and the fleece is completely dry. And so Gideon begins to think, God must be serious here. You know, by the way, if you ever hear someone talking about putting out a fleece to validate the will of God, this is what they're referring to, this particular incident. But remember, this scripture isn't supporting that concept or endorsing it. It's just simply reporting what happened. This is where the story gets really interesting. Gideon is now getting sacked up. God has told him that he, Gideon, son of Joash, is going to lead the Israelite army to a great victory over the Midianites. And then he confirmed it to this entire fleece thing that went on. And so Gideon calls for all the men who have come, and he looks out over his army of 32,000 men, and he thinks, you know, this could be cool. We could do this. And God says, not so fast, Gideon. You got too many men. Too many men? How can you have too many men? You know, I mean, sure, if you got 60 men in a 50-man lifeboat, then you might have too many men. But we're going to battle. And you can never have too many men. Am I right? You know, especially if you're outnumbered 4-1. Well, God obviously didn't think so. You see, God wanted this to be a God thing. And Gideon wanted it to be a man thing. And you really can't blame Gideon for that. But God said, you have too many warriors. And when they win, they're going to think that they did it all by themselves. So tell them that whoever's afraid can go home. And Gideon says to God, you know, if you want a leader, I'll be the leader of that group, the one that leads. So Gideon gets up and makes the announcement, and 22,000 guys leave. 22,000 gone. Just like that, Gideon's down to just 10,000 men. And just as Gideon's kind of got his head wrapped around that, and what was happens next is that God says, still too many. Still too many. And so God tells Gideon to get the men to go down to the river for a drink. And those who get right down on their knees and lap the water like a dog were to go into one group. And those who, you know, cupped the water with their hands and brought it up to their mouth would be another group. And only the 300 of the soldiers drank from their cupped hands, you know. And I'm sure that Gideon was thinking, oh boy, you know, I hope I get the puppies, you know. Well, as it was not to be, God told Gideon to keep the men who drank from their hands, and they sent the rest. And there he was, stuck with 300 men. The only thing that he had going for them was that they drank politely. So what are you going to do? Now, at this point, I'm not sure that Gideon was all that convinced of the validity of the plan, and so God told him, if you don't believe I can do it, sneak down to the enemy camp and listen to what they're saying. And that's what he did. He took one of his leaders with him, and they snuck into the Midianite camp, and they were eavesdropping on the conversation going on around the campfire. two guys are talking, and the first said, "No, I had the strangest dream last night. Now, I dreamt that a loaf of barley bread rolled down the hill into the camp and flattened one of our tents." And the second guy says, "I told you what would happen when you eat Mexican food." But he says, "You know, your dream can only mean one thing. Gideon and his men are going to whoop us. Now, it's a good thing that I wasn't there, because I'm really no good at all with this dream thing, and I probably would say that this means that instead of a soldier, you ought to be a baker," you know, which wouldn't have been any encouragement to Gideon at all. Instead, Gideon took the dream and the interpretation as a sign from God, and he went back up into the hills and to his camp, and he began to rally the troops. And he divided his 300 men into three groups. That would be 100 in each group. I didn't go to college for nothing here. And he gave each man a horn and a clay jar with it. Great idea, isn't it? So just after midnight, they surround the Midianite camp, and on the given signal, they blew their horns, broke their clay pots, and revealed their torches. And the Midianites panicked. The Israelites blew their horns again, and the Bible tells us that the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to start fighting with each other, and those who weren't killed fled in the confusion. The man once said, "I love it when a plan comes together." So that's the story of Gideon. A little fractured, maybe. Remember the fractured fairy tale? There's a little fractured in this. But that's pretty much the story of Gideon. But what are the lessons of Gideon? The first mention of Gideon is Judges 6:11. Gideon, son of Joash, had been threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. That's it. No big fanfare, no big build-up. He was nobody special. He was just Gideon, son of Joash. He was just threshing wheat, minding his own business, doing what had to be done. And the first lesson here is, you don't have to be somebody special to do something special. One of the biggest lies of the world is that God only uses special people. And like all lies of this world, this one was based on a half-truth. God does use only special people, but they are special because God uses them. God doesn't use them because they're special. I want you to listen to the words of God here. 1 Peter 2:9 says, "For you are a chosen people, you are a kingdom of priests, God's holy nation, his very own possession. This is so you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light." Do you understand how special you are? You know, you are special enough to God that God was willing to have his very own son die for you. How much God loves. If you are a parent, you know the difference. You know, there are many people here today, you know, that I'd lay my life on the line for. But there is one here that I'd give up one of my kids for. Or one of my grandkids for. And yet, that is exactly what happened, because you are so special. Jesus Christ willingly died on the cross, was laid in a borrowed tomb, and after 3 days rose from the dead. Willingly he did that, not because he had to, but because you are that special. Special has nothing to do with the way that you look, or what you can do, or how smart you are. Special has to do with the fact that you were created as a very unique individual by none other than the Master of the universe. The same God that draws the rainbows in the sky. The same God who paints the morning sunrise and the evening sunset. The same God that scooped out the Grand Canyon with his fingers, who molded the Rocky Mountains with his hands, who threw the Milky Way into the midnight sky. That same God. You don't have to be someone special to do something special. Stevie Wonder said, we all have ability. The difference is how we use it. Zig Ziglar said, you're the only person on earth who can use your ability. Secondly, just because you have questions doesn't mean you're disobedient. You ever get the impression sometimes when people talk that you should never question God, never speak back, struggle with what he's laid out for you? I think that is not a correct response all the time to what God has given to us. You know, we're not a bunch of brain-dead androids. He gave us the ability to reason, the ability to think, and yes, the ability to question. But you have to realize that God doesn't have to answer all your questions. Two verses after Gideon is introduced to us, I listen to his response to God's call on his life. He says this in Judges 6:13, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites. And that's three questions there without taking a breath. And listens to God's response to this. And the Lord turned to him and said, go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you. That's not the answer to any of those questions, is it? God just gave him a request. But then again, Gideon probably already knew the answer. God didn't move here, you know. It was the Israelites that moved. It was the Israelites who became disobedient. Abraham asked, how will I father a nation when I haven't fathered a son? Moses asked, how can I confront Pharaoh when I don't speak well? If you read through the Psalms, you'll see David could have been a reporter asking questions of God. How, why, when, and where? Mary asked, you know, how can I have a son when I'm still a virgin? Even Jesus, when he hung on the cross, asked, my God, why have you forsaken? God doesn't ask that we come in and we check our brains at the door, but understand God is God and you are people. And you might not understand the why and you might not agree with the why, but God is still God and you are just still people. Thirdly, remember who's supposed to get the credit. What a ride here. 300 men. 300 men sent 135,000 warriors packing. The temptation must have been so great to say, look what we've done. We're so good. Where's Gideon? He's such an awesome leader. Hey, Gideon, you're the man. And how would you have felt if you was Gideon? Well, yes, it was a great idea, and I knew it was going to be a tremendous success. Listen to what happens after the victory, Judges 8, Then the Israelites said to Gideon, "Be our ruler. You and your son and your grandson will be our rulers, for you have rescued us from Midian." From farmer to king, how could that be? You know, that's not a bad career move, is it? But listen to Gideon's response in the very next verse. But Gideon replied, "I will not rule over you, nor will my son. The Lord will rule over you." Let's always be careful about who gets the credit. When things go well, the temptation is there to say, "Look what we have done." But it's not what we've done. It's what He's done. Are you willing to be a Gideon, to allow God to do great things through you? All things are possible. Do you believe that this evening?